Let me just take a moment.
Sahanavatu, Sahanapunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai, Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
So this text, the small text, I think it has 12 verses in it, plus the introduction verses. I think it's 12, either 10 or 12, something like that. It's called the Hastamalakiya Bhashyam. What it is, Hastamalaka was one of Shankara's students. And as the story goes, he was a young boy, 8 or 9 years old, just a young boy, living in a village with his parents, and he was mute. He never talked, you know. And so the parents were very worried about him. And one day Shankara and his sishas, his students, were coming through the village, and the parents went with Hastamalaka to ask Shankara for blessings and to help with this boy. And so the parents told him the problem, and Shankara looked at the boy and he said, Who are you? And Hastamalaka, tell me who are you? Tell me about yourself, who are you? And Hastamalaka came out with these 12 verses. each one basically saying, I'm Brahman. And beautiful verses. So each verse is a vision. It's just beautiful. A long time ago, Swamiji asked me to translate this text and to translate the commentary on it, which I did, but I was never quite happy enough with it to publish it. Someday we'll give it to the Arshavidya Trust and they'll publish it as a little booklet. But I'm very familiar with these verses. They're so nice too. And I forgot to bring my red book. I don't need it right now. But I'll also be referring to some parts, beautiful parts in the commentary, where Shankara ended up writing a commentary on these beautiful verses that just came out of Hastamalaka's mouth. And then from that point on, Shankara said, let me take him with us. So the boy, the parents handed him over, and Hastamalika, as a very young boy, started going with Shankara and his disciples and studying. That's as the story goes. So it's a beautiful story. So this text starts with three prayer verses, you know, which themselves are beautiful. So you have it there. So repeat after me. Yasmin yate bhavet sarvam.
Yasmin yate bhavet sarvam.
Vignatam paramatmani.
Vignatam paramatmani.
Tam vande nitya vignanam.
Tam vande nitya vignanam.
Anandam ajamavyayam.
Anandam ajamavyayam.
Yes, I'll break the sandhi. Yasmin nyate bhavet sarvam vignatam paramaatmani. Paramaatmani. Compound paramaatmani. Tam vande nitya vijnanam. So nitya vijnanam is a compound. Nitya vijnanam. Anandam ajam avyayam. So, second line, tam vande, I prostrate to, I salute, I bow down to him, tam vande, to him, that one, that is nitya vijnanam. So, the tam is in the accusative. So, nitya vijnanam, who is timeless, nitya vijnanam, consciousness, nitya vijnanam, who's being, conscious being, who is consciousness, which is free from time, free from past, present, and future. So nitya vijnanam. Ajam, who is birthless, who's never taken birth, never been born. And avyayam, never goes through any type, never goes away from the being that it is. It's free from any type of change. Avyayam means navyeti. Navyeti means for something to, say like for a fruit decomposes. Right, it moves away from its, from the freshness, from the wholeness of its nature, and decomposes. It moves away from its swarupa. Swarupa means its own nature. It loses its nature. So avyaya is that which never loses its nature. The being that it is, it always remains. It is never born. See, if satin is born, takes a birth, it can't be nitya. It can't be timeless, free of time. Anything that's born has to exist within time. It has, because it has to come into being. That takes time. Something's not born, isn't timeless, free of time, and at the same time born. So what is nitya, free of time, can't have a birth. It can't have a beginning, right? Because it exists, but it is not bound by time. So that means it has no beginning. It has no end. There's no change in the middle. As soon as you bring in any type of change, you bring in time. The very word nitya means it is free from time. So he says, I bow down to Tam, that one who is whose consciousness, who's the conscious being, this means this conscious being is nitya, free from time, nitya vijnanam, ajam, free of birth, and avyaya, changeless, that which never loses its nature, never changes from its nature, never deviates from its nature. That's the second line. Then he says, that one who is nitya vijnanam anandam ajam avyayam. Okay, so then, yasmin nyate, top line, paramatmani. That's the locative absolute. Yasmin nyate paramatmani, all in the locative. When that self, when that paramatma, atma means self. You could say myself, yourself, yourself. The paramatma means the self that is really you. Parama means that supreme self. That self, we can say with the parama, there's a word that we use. What does it mean? Supreme self. I don't like the word supreme. It makes me think of the supremes or something. Just supreme self. But parama, so parama can be defined as desha kala vastu. aparicheda. It means that atma, yourself actually, that self, which is aparicheda. It's not limited by desha, by space, by kala, by time, or by vastu, objectivity. Like this is a vastu, this is a vastu. All of the different nama rupas, all of the different names and forms that we experience in the creation, each one is a thing different from another thing. This is different from this, it's different from this. So all of these objects, they're called vastus. So Brahman, the self, your being, the paramatma that you are, is not limited by space. Now to say it's not limited by space means you can't say, well, atma, the self, is over here and not over here. There's no spatial limitation. In fact, it illumines space. It's not confined by space. It's a very one who illumines space. Otherwise, you can say, I'm limited by space, right? Because I exist in a certain space, different from your space, your space, your space. So we're all limited by space. But the whole universe is illumined by the self, which is and comes and goes in the self, which itself is not limited by space at all. I can say I'm limited by time because my body comes into being and goes out of being. My thoughts arise and leave, one thought after another. This body grows old and dies. It has limited by birth and death. So this body is not only limited by space, it's limited by time. But your being, the Atma, the Paramatma, the self that you are in fact, is not limited by space. You are not limited by time. And you are not limited by objectness. You're not an object. To be differentiated from other objects is the very being, the very self, that is the changeless self of all experiences that come and go. So he says, when that paramatma is known, yasmin jnate paramatmani, bhavet sarvam vijnatam, everything becomes known. When that self is known, everything becomes known. So my salutations to that self, which is limitless, nityam, timeless consciousness, which has never been born and never changes in any way, never goes through any modification in any way. So my prayers to, my salutations to that self. Now, of course, these prayer verses, each verse is huge. Huge in terms of what it's actually covering. There's something here that we'll work on. So we have the time to actually have some depth here. If I were to say, as the Upanishads, they're very clearly in the Chandogya Upanishad, knowing which, everything is as well known. That's what it says, when this is known, when this Paramatma is known, everything becomes known. What would be an example of that? They have a couple of examples. Like if I were to know a pot, a clay pot, by knowing the pot form, not every form becomes known, right? Because all of the forms are different. But if I know the clay, if I know the clay, then the truth of every clay pot becomes known. The forms are all different. The forms can be infinite. But if I know the clay, then I know what is actually there. What the clay pot actually is in reality. But this is the whole Vedanta, in fact, as Advaita, the non-duality of Vedanta, means one without a second, can all be understood if you understand the clay pot. So the clay pot is the very important, what we call drishtanta, or illustration. If we use the example of the clay pot for the self, for the nature of the self, in reference to the entire creation, right? Because when this is known, everything is known. Everything means that everything that exists within time and space, on every level, this physical universe, as far as we can't even reach the ends of the physical universe, but talk about the whole physical universe, on all of its dimensions, any subtle universe that may be there, causal universe that may be there, everything that exists within time and space, known and unknown, is what we mean by sarvam, by all. So when this Paramatma is known, everything on every level that exists within time and space is known. Okay. And if you want a causal condition, which is causal to time and space, that also is known. In fact, they say that in the Mandukya Upanishad, just in case you think we're leaving out something. Nothing is left out. Okay. Knowing this, everything that exists is known. If I know, in terms of the clay pot, if I know the clay, everything about the pot that actually is known. How do we mean? Because if we look at clay pot, there isn't clay and the pot, right? From the standpoint of the clay, there is only clay. There is no pot, because there's no pot that has any being whatsoever apart from the clay for you to say that there's clay and a pot. You know, you can't say that there's a pot without the clay, right? The pot is totally dependent on clay. In fact, there is no pot at all. It doesn't even exist apart from the clay. Not one iota, not one little bit. But on the other hand, the clay is not dependent on the pot at all. From the standpoint of the clay, there's only clay. From the standpoint of the pot, you know, I am a pot, right? I, the pot, am clay. That's the ajnani, that's the ignorant pot. The ignorant pot says, I, the pot, am the clay. And when I, the pot, you know, I could drop, or I am mortal, something can happen to destroy me, and at that time, I, the pot, which is clay, will be destroyed. See what I mean? So the pot, because it's ignorant, it believes that the clayness is dependent on the form pot. Whereas the jnani knows, the one who has self-knowledge knows, I, the pot, am really clay. In truth, am only clay, which is totally free of the pot. My clayness does not depend upon the pot. My clayness does not depend upon whatever, any form that the pot may take. It makes no difference. In fact, as clay, I can take infinite number of forms, and nothing happens to me, the clay. You see? So there's a relationship there between pot, between clay and pot. And the relationship is this. The pot is what is actually there. I mean, the clay is what is actually there. So we say the clay is satyam. The clay is the reality. The clay is what actually has existence, being, right? So the clay is the existent being. And the pot is what we call mithya. Mithya means that pot is there in Vyavahara, in this empirical reality. We can all talk about the pot. We can use the pot. It's useful, all of these type of things. It's there to be experienced. But its being, itself, is 100% dependent on the clay, which we call its adhishtana. The mithya, what is classified as mithya, depends upon an adhishtana. The adhishtana is the thing that is actually there, right? And so for a clay pot, for the pot, the clay is the adhishtana. That's what is really there. So that's what we call a satyam, is real. The pot has no second reality. It's not the reality of the clay and the reality of the pot. See, the reality of the pot is what we call mithya, which means it has no reality at all, apart from the satyam. The satyam clay is what is actually there. Why this is important in understanding yourself and understanding this universe, the universe of your experience, is that the whole teaching of all of the Upanishads, you know, and what you need to see actually to be free, we'll see that and more as we go along. There's the vision of what we call the vision of the Upanishads is called Advaita. Means non-dual. Dvaita means dual. Advaita means non-dual. Means one without a second. But the reality of this creation is only one. There's only one thing here. Now, that's an interesting concept. Let me just unfold this just a little minute, then we'll go back to where we were. If what the Upanishads have to say is true, that the nature of reality, the nature of God, the nature of all that is only one, that one must be you, or you're not here. It must be you. If there is only one, right? If there's only one reality, then everything must be that one reality. Otherwise you don't exist. You see that? If you say, what exists here, what is the satyam, what is the reality of this whole creation is one non-dual self, right? Then that one non-dual self has to be you, or somehow you're not here. And the other problem, so you have to recognize that I, in fact, am the truth of everything. And then you also have to recognize, well, yeah, but so many things are here. How can you say that? That I am the one non-dual reality of all that is. It's because all that is mithya, like the pot. Everything that we experience within time and space has no independent reality apart from the conscious being, which itself, that conscious being, which is my very being, which itself is timeless nitya vijnanam, timeless consciousness, which has never been born as ajam, which never changes. So there's two things to recognize, just in broad sweeps, two things to recognize is that my being is really the self of all beings, is the clay of all pots. Right? I am the very self, upon which the whole which is in fact the very self of the whole creation. And all of these names and forms, this infinite creation, really is nothing but me in its essence. Just like whatever pot is there, that pot, in it, whatever clay pot is there, it only has one truth, one self. And it has no being of its own. You can't take the clay away from the pot. If you take the clay away from the pot, there's no pot. Because really, there's only clay. Everybody see that? Another illustration for this that I think is expands it a little bit is to use the wave ocean. That's a beautiful illustration to understand this, the relationship of my innermost being to the whole creation. If you think of all of the waves in the ocean, including all of the froth, you know, all of the bubbles, all of the wave forms, the bubbles, the froth, all the waves of different sizes, and sometimes the flat line, waves are all flatlining, right? And sometimes they're big, huge tsunami waves. All of the waves really comprise one huge ocean. The ocean itself is comprised of all of these waves. And all of the waves, in fact, make up the ocean. Right? The ocean is like the one entity in which all the waves exist. Everybody see that? So we can have one big Ishwara. The ocean is like Ishwara, the Lord. And then the Lord and all of the laws of the ocean contain all of the waves. So Ishwara is this huge, the Lord is this huge, big, huge ocean, and the little waves are all of the little individual jivas, right? All of the, you're a jiva, you're an individual, you're an individual. Jiva are these living beings. I'm a jiva, you're a jiva, you're a jiva. All the living beings that transmigrate. Like imagine a wave, it goes flat, comes back again, you know? A wave kind of goes down, comes up, goes through all kinds of gyrations, all kinds of forms. Those are all the jivas, all of the individuals that make up this, individual waves that make up this great ocean. And so on this level, we can say, yes, each one of us is really part of the ocean. Each wave is part of the ocean. So I belong to the ocean. I'm contained by the ocean. I'm held by the ocean, all of the laws of the ocean, and as are all of the other waves. We're all, each one of us, we are all a part to the whole. We are a part of the ocean. Every wave is a part of the ocean. Right? That's one level of truth. It'd be like saying, every one of us, and I think even with science, we're able to say this now, every one, and understand it, every one of us is part of the universe. We're not separate from it. You know, like an entity that jumped from someplace else into the universe, we're part and parcel of the universe. We're made of the same material of the universe. We belong to the universe. We're part of the whole. This is a part of the whole. Even with experiences like synchronicity and telepathy and these type of things, we can also say on a subtle level, we must be part of an interconnected whole. Because we have experiences of different types of experiences of synchronicity and things that allow me to feel telepathy and things like that, allow me to recognize just in terms of my daily life that there's something interconnecting us on a psychic level also. So we can may not know that much about it, but we intuit the fact because of our experiences that the mind itself is part of an interconnected whole. The body is part of an interconnected whole. So we're all like waves in an ocean, right? So I use that example. But that's not where the example stops. It goes deeper. And that is that the waves, each wave, every wave, the froth, the bubbles, are really nothing but water. So this wave is water. The satyam, the adhishtana, the truth of every wave, is water. The wave itself has no being apart from the water. Right? Whether it be a little tiny wave, a huge wave, whether it be froth, whether it be bubbles, all of these namarupas, all of these forms really, depend totally for their being on water. And the waves themselves have no existence, and yet we experience them, so we call them mitya. They're experienced, but they have no being apart from the water. Right? And so, in fact, we would say, this wave is water, 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 the whole ocean is nothing but water. So the whole teaching of the Vedanta is, O wave, you are the ocean. The wave, it's called a Mahavakya. If I say to you, you know, O Jiva, O person, you know, you are the Lord, you are Ishwara, you are this whole universe, you're going to say, what? So the wave is also going to say, no, I'm not the ocean, I'm part of the ocean, though, I agree with that, I'm part of the ocean, of course I am. So that way I'm the ocean. That way I'm the ocean. I'm part of the ocean. No, you are the ocean. How can I be the ocean? Because the water that you are is the water that the ocean is. There is only one water. Of course, when we use the wave ocean, there's still space. Like this little bunch of water over here is different than the water that this wave enjoys. You know what I mean? So you can say, well, yeah, I'm water. Just like this guy over here is water, but his water is different than my water, right? Mm-hmm. It's still water, but this water is different, and then Bhagavan has all, the Lord has all of this water. The Lord Ocean has a lot more water than I do. So that's how we'll think, because of the limitations of the illustration. But here, think of it like this. That example is just trying to show the satya-mitya relationship between the forms and the water. But now we have to understand that the water example really, you know, has to be, then we have to work on that to make you remember that in terms of who I am, I don't take up space. I don't take up time. Time and space belong to the creation. That's why when we use an example like your imagination, when you imagine, like say you imagine What if you were to imagine the ocean and the beach and walking along? You have a beautiful imagination. An activity is taking place. You're taking a walk along the beach with your friends. You're seeing the seagulls and the birds flying, and you're feeling the wind. And you're watching the sun and seeing the wispy clouds, you know, as you walk along the beach. So you're having this imagination. That imagination comes from you, but now look at what is included in the imagination. Space is included in the imagination. Time is included, right? Space and time belong to the imagination. When I withdraw the imagination, so I say, okay, don't imagine anymore, withdraw that. You're withdrawing the imagination and the time and space that belong to that imagination. You see that? It's very important, actually, because in reference to the imagination, the time and space, that the time sequence within, it takes place within the imagination. The space takes place and belongs to the imagination. And when you withdraw the imagination, you're withdrawing the time and space that belong to the imagination. You have nothing to do. Yourself has nothing to do with that time and space. So yourself is not big or large. Yourself is not young or old. Yourself is timeless. Say just for now, just in reference to the imagination, yourself is timeless in reference to the time that takes place in the imagination. Yourself doesn't have any space in reference to the space that takes place in the imagination, right? And so you aren't big or small or young or old. Yourself is just constant presence from which the imagination comes. The imagination or the dream is a wonderful and very important illustration to understand your relationship with this whole creation. Because time and space themselves belong to the world of the known, the world of the experience, of what is experienced. They don't belong to the subject that's illumining. Don't worry, we'll spend a lot of time on this. I don't want to get you too confused. But in terms of just to kind of give you a little opener in reference to this verse. Now, let's go back. So this verse says, I prostrate to, I salute, I bow down to Vande Tam, that one who is Nitya Vijnanam, means yourself, which is conscious being, consciousness, which doesn't change. Just like in reference to your being, in reference to the imagination. In fact, as we'll see deeply, your being in reference to your imagination is no different than your being in reference to every experience that you have. Whether it be imagination, which is subjective, or it be an experience, objective experience in reference to this world, right? The relationship that this world or your imagination has to yourself is exactly the same, which we'll be seeing over and over again, don't worry. So, nityam vijnanam anandam, which is limitless fullness, which is free of birth because birth requires time, which is avyayam, which never changes, which never loses its nature. So my salutations to that one, that what we call that one, that is the Paramatma, is the truth of yourself, is the infinite me, the infinite being that you are, knowing which everything is known, everything becomes known. Because the relationship that I have to every single experience that comes my way, every experience that exists within time and space, is the relationship of Satyam Nitya. Because as you'll see as we go through this, remember these are prayer verses. Prayer verses give you the whole thing, usually, in just a very brief form. But we'll see, we have to analyze the world of our experience, and we have to see if there's anything in our experience on at any level anything that exists within duality that has any independent being of its own. And I'll tell you, it's very, very easy to dismiss this creation as having independent being. And we'll be doing that in depth, dismissing this. You think this is a solid creation, but actually if you start to analyze any given part of it, the analysis goes on into what we call an infinite regress. You can never find a thing. You only find conglomerates, things within things within things within things, forms within forms within forms within forms, to infinite regress. We'll do a lot of examples of that and do spend time with it. Another thing you'll find as you analyze this universe, subtle and gross, any experience that you have, every single experience that you have comes into being and goes out of being. If it comes into being, what was it before it came into being? Non-existent. Nothing can come from non-existence because non-existence is not there. Right? So for something to come into being and go out of being means that form that you're experiencing has to depend on something that actually does exist, or you couldn't experience it. But it itself comes into being and goes out of being. This is the nature of the creation. So we have to analyze it until you think, that is a logical impossibility. It's a logical impossibility for any of this to have any independent existence. So you have to see that in many, many different ways. So then you can say, okay, I'm the truth of this whole thing. It's not just conceptual, it's not just a head trip, but what you actually, the experience, your self-experience is here. And there's two things that have to happen. You have to see yourself independently of all of the name and form. And then you have to see yourself as the self of all of the names and forms. By independently, I mean now at this time, you take yourself to be this body, mind, sense, or means I am this. I am my mind. I am my body. I am my feelings. That I am that, that means there's a total identity there, where in actuality, you're aware of that. You're not that. You're aware of that. You're aware of these things that are going on, changing and coming and going, but you take yourself to be that, right? Because from the standpoint of the body and from the standpoint of your mind and your thoughts and your emotions, just like the pot enjoys the clay, all of these things enjoy you fully 100%. So why wouldn't there be, from the standpoint of your mind, a total identity, you know, with yourself? It's like, why wouldn't the pot say, I am the clay? Because it is the clay, right? The pot says, oh, I'm not the clay. Well, no, it says, I am the clay. And you say, I am the conscious being. Why? Because you are. You are that. You just don't recognize that the you that is that is totally free of the form. The form isn't free of you, but you're free of the form, right? So this is what we have to, there's some recognitions that have to take place. You have to see it, then you have to understand it also. Your mind wants to understand. It doesn't want to just believe something. It wants to know something. In Vedanta, we don't have any such idea that we should shut down our mind, or that this is all beyond our mind, and so we should just turn off the mind and have an experience. No, we say, the Upanishads say, the self-experience that you are is already fully present. This is not an experience to be gained, it's an experience to be recognized, because you're already fully, completely here. So you say, I have to have an experience of myself. As though you're not having an experience of yourself. As though you're not here. The problem is not having an experience of myself. It's differentiating. The mind has the problem of being self-ignorant. And so even though it knows me, is me, right? It gives to me all of its qualities. Even though I am free of it, I am illumining its qualities and all of its conditions. from its own standpoint, it takes those conditions to be me. And that's why I can say, oh, I'm so unhappy, or I'm so depressed, or wow, I'm just elated. Or the I, you know, or I'm smart, or I'm stupid, you know, or I'm fat, or I'm thin, or I'm tall, or I'm short. Right? The mind is saying that, not the self. The self, if we're to talk, we just go. There's some teaching is necessary here. But yourself doesn't have a voice. It just simply is whole and complete and free. The mind has the problem. So that differentiation between the mind and the thoughts and me has to take place. And the, but the differentiation is a different type of differentiation. It's not the mind over here and the self over here. It's satya mitya. It's the mind recognizing its own order of reality in reference to me. That's what has to take place. It's not the discovery of a new me, it's the recognizing that this me, which is most dear, you know, is actually whole and complete and free. Right? So it's not a new experience, but it's recognizing the self experience as free from all of these misidentifications. And as I recognize that, it's such a beautiful thing, it's such a gift for your mind, because now your mind starts to have a home. It has a home. I am its home. I'm its home base, and I am whole and complete and full. I'm never going to leave. The mind can never be abandoned. It never has to search for its ananda. It has a sanctuary. I am the sanctuary of this mitya mind. So it's a huge, tremendous relief for the mind. You know, the self that the mind recognizes, the self that I've always been, that I've always taken as me, is me, but thank God it's free of me also. It is me, but it is free of me. So therefore I can always relax into that wholeness. Because that wholeness doesn't change no matter what's going on in my mind. That's what we have to keep recognizing in so many different ways. Okay. Have I talked enough here? I think so for today. Okay.
Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om